Someone approached Jesus in the scripture reading that we had in Luke chapter 12, asking him to settle a dispute over an inheritance. Jesus declined, saying that, well, that isn't his occupation. But he pointed out the root problem between the brothers. And the root problem was greed between those two. We know this without even knowing the facts in the case. Because whether it was the one holding on to more than was proper, or the other one demanding more than was proper, greed was the root cause of this problem. Greed, or covetousness, the love of money. However you word it, this sin lies at the root of many sins. In fact, Paul says in 1 Timothy chapter 6, 1 Timothy chapter 6, and in verse 6, but godliness actually is a means of great gain when accompanied by contentment. For we brought nothing into this world, so we cannot take anything out of it either. If we have food and covering, with these we shall be content. But those who want to get rich fall into temptation and a snare, and many foolish and harmful desires, which plunge men into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is a root of all sorts of evil, and some, by longing for it, have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs. But flee these things, you man of God, and pursue righteousness, godliness, faith, love, perseverance, and gentleness. Now, Jesus illustrated his point with a parable concerning a rich man. I want you to think about this for a moment. The man was not a thief. He didn't practice extortion. He wasn't a swindler. In fact, the man presented is an honest farmer who gained his wealth through hard work and perhaps a bit of luck on that particular year because he had a bumper crop, which he decided how he was going to handle it. But he made some mistakes, serious mistakes. You see, this rich man measured his success in the wrong way. Jesus told the story to point out that life does not consider or consist of the things which you have. Take a look at Luke chapter 12 and in verse 15. Then he said to them, beware and be on your guard against every form of grief or greed. For not even when one has an abundance does his life consist of his possessions. That doesn't define your life. It doesn't matter how much you have. But wealth was his security. He thought that he had it made because he had an abundance. But notice the warning in Proverbs chapter 18. Proverbs 18 and in verse 11. A rich man's wealth is a strong city, and like a high wall in his own imagination. He saw it as a protection, when it really was not. Because what we have to realize is life extends beyond this world. But the things in this world stay in this world. If we go back to 1 Timothy chapter 6. 1 Timothy chapter 6 and in verse 7. It says, for we have brought nothing into this world, so we cannot take anything out of it either. Now, no matter how much money you have, Wealth is an unstable commodity. It just doesn't stay around. In Proverbs 23 in verse 4, it says, "Do not weary yourself to gain wealth. Cease from your consideration of it. When you set your eyes on it, it is gone. For wealth certainly makes itself wings like an eagle that flies toward the heavens." We just cannot trust it. How can you measure your success with something that just comes and goes, seemingly as it pleases? And then, too, who's deciding that his life is a success? Who has made that decision? This makes me myself successful. Is it not the man who's choosing it? Take a look at Proverbs 27 in verse 2. It says, "Let another praise you, and not your own mouth, a stranger, and not your own lips." See, when we measure ourselves against other people, "Oh, I'm doing better than the neighbor down the road." Well, that's not a great decision, because I'm judging by other people that are also flawed. In fact, Paul warns, he's talking about here, about false teachers, but the principle still remains the same in 2 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 12, "For we are not bold to class or compare ourselves with some of those who commend themselves. But when they measure themselves by themselves and compare themselves with themselves, they are without understanding." If I'm the measure of success, or even if I use my neighbor as a measure of success, it is not a smart thing to do. The only true measure of success is what is found in what God sees. In 1 Corinthians chapter 4, 1 Corinthians chapter 4 and verse 4, "For I'm conscious of nothing against myself, yet I am not by this acquitted. But the one who examines me is the Lord." And the proper writer, Solomon, also says something very similar in Proverbs chapter 21. Proverbs 21 and in verse 2. "Every man's way is right in his own eyes, but the Lord weighs the heart." If I judge myself by myself, I'm going to come out looking good. But it's really God who makes the decisions, not me. The other problem the rich man had is that he missed the opportunity to do good with his surplus. One of the joys of working is the opportunity it provides for us to help other people. In Ephesians chapter 4, and in verse 28, it says, "He who steals must steal no longer, but rather he must labor, performing with his own hands what is good, so that he will have something to share with the one who has need." One of the reasons we work is so that we have, hopefully, a little bit of extra that we can share with others who are not as fortunate as we are. Jesus also said in Luke chapter 3, or actually this was John the Baptist, in Luke chapter 3 and in verse 11, John said, "He who would answer and say to them, 'The man who has two tunics is to share with the one who has none, and he who has food is to do likewise.'" When you have excess, God expects us to share it with other people. And yet this man's focus, this rich man in a parable, was focused solely on himself. He was thinking about how much I will have in the future. Over in Ecclesiastes chapter 11, one of the advice that's given is that we ought to share what we have. And it says, cast your bread on the surface of the waters, and you will find it after many days. Well, he's talking about feed the fish. You feed the fish today with your excess bread that you don't really need. Days later, when you're hungry, you got fish to catch. They're well fed. In verse 2, it says, divide your portion to seven, or even to eight, for you do not know what misfortune may occur on the earth. Share your bounty with other people, and then when you are in need, there's somebody else there who can share with you. But the ultimate retirement plan, the one that we should be looking at, is the one that the Lord offers. In Luke chapter 12, look at verse 29. Luke chapter 12, verse 29, Jesus says, do not seek what you will eat or what you will drink, and do not keep worrying. For all these things the nations of the world eagerly seek, but your Father knows what you need, that you need these things. But seek his kingdom, and these things will be added to you. Do not be afraid, little flock, for your Father has chosen gladly to give you the kingdom. Sell your possessions and give to charity. Make yourselves money belts which do not wear out, an unfailing treasure in heaven, where no thief comes near, nor moth destroys. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Our focus ought to be doing our Father's will. Focused on doing good to others. That's the proper use of wealth. In fact, in 1 Timothy chapter 6, 1 Timothy chapter 6 and in verse 17, it says, instruct those who are rich in this present world not to be conceited, nor to fix their hope on the uncertainty of riches, but on God who richly supplies us with all things to enjoy. Instruct them to do good, to be rich in good works, to be generous and ready to share, storing up for themselves the treasure of a good foundation for the future, so that they may take hold of that which is life indeed. Interestingly, in the Old Testament, the Jews oftentimes would go fasting to show themselves as devoted worshipers of God. And God scolds them for this. And in Isaiah chapter 58, Isaiah 58, he says, is it a fast which, like this that I choose, a day for a man to humble himself? Is it for bowing one's head like a reed and for spreading out sackcloth and ashes as a bed? Will you call this a fast, even an acceptable day to the Lord? Is this not the fast which I choose, to loosen the bonds of wickedness, to undo the bands of the yoke, and to let the oppressed go free and break every yoke? Is it not to divide your bread with the hungry, and to bring the homeless poor into the house, when you see the naked to cover him, and not to hide yourself from your own flesh? When you light, then your light will break out like the dawn, and your recovery will speedily spring forth, and your righteousness will go before you. The glory of the Lord will be your rear guard. This is what God wants. This is what God's looking for. He's not looking for acts of piety. He's looking for acts of righteousness. But the rich man also tried to find happiness in the wrong things. The rich man believed he could be happy because I have money. I have enough to supply me for the rest of my life. But his treasures were on earth. In Matthew chapter 6, Matthew chapter 6 and verse 19, Jesus says, do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal, but store up for yourselves treasures in heaven where neither moth nor rust destroys, and where thieves do not break in or steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Now remember, you know, wealth is fickle. To find joy in something that's fleeting is foolish. Our joy should be in our God, who's eternal. In Philippians chapter 4. Philippians chapter 4 and verse 4. Rejoice in the Lord always. And again I say, rejoice. There is where my joy should be, is in my Lord. And another problem the rich man had is that he thought he knew the future. He thought he knew what was going to come up. And he did not realize that his life was about to end. In Proverbs chapter 27, Proverbs 27 verse 1, it says, do not boast about tomorrow, for you do not know what a day may bring forth. I can't even tell you what's going to happen later today. I know what I'm planning. But who knows what's going to happen between now and then? Life is so short, and life is so unpredictable. Over in James chapter 4, James chapter 4 and verse 13. Come now, you who say, today or tomorrow we will go into such and such a city and spend a year there and engage in business and make a profit, yet you do not know what your life will be like tomorrow. You are just a vapor that appears for a little while and then vanishes away. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we will live and also do this or that. But as it is, you boast in your arrogance. All such boasting is evil. Because after this life comes judgment. I don't know when I'm leaving this world. But when I do, the next thing I'm going to be facing is judgment. In Hebrews chapter 9, Hebrews 9 and in verse 27, inasmuch as it is appointed for men to die once, and after this comes judgment. The psalmist back in Psalms 39. Psalm 39 and in verse 6. He says, surely every man walks about as a phantom. Surely they make an uproar for nothing. He amasses riches and does not know who will gather them. We might think that I got a retirement plan and I got wealth untold. But you may not be there. Who knows who ends up with your money? Because this man trusted in his wealth, the problem was he made no preparations. He didn't make any thought or give any thought to his life hereafter. And in Psalms 52, Psalms 52 and verse 7, behold the man who would not make God his refuge, but trust in the abundance of his riches, and was strong in his evil desire. But as for me, I am like a green olive tree in the house of God. I trust in the loving kindness of God forever and ever. Where do we put our priorities? Where do we put our trust? You see, the mistakes the rich man made are common ones. We all make them. But when you see danger in front of you, what do you do? In Proverbs 22 and verse 3, it says, the prudent sees evil and hides himself, but the naive go on and are punished for it. You know, a lot of ways, we're kind of like the fool who wants life to go our way. And we get mad because life's unfair. It's supposed to do it my way. In Proverbs chapter 14. Proverbs 14 and verse 16. The wise man is cautious and turns away from evil, but the fool is arrogant and careless. Peter, as he approached the end of his life, tells us, his readers, in 1 Peter chapter 4, starting at verse 1, he says, "Therefore, since Christ has suffered in the flesh, arm yourself also with the same purpose, because he who has suffered in the flesh has ceased from sin, so as to live the rest of time in the flesh, no longer for the lust of men, but for the will of God. For the time already past is sufficient for you to have carried out the desires of the Gentiles, having pursued a course of sensuality, lust, drunkenness, carousing, drinking parties, and abominable idolatries." We spend enough time in this world doing the things that don't make us reach heaven. We need to start thinking about, where are we laying up our treasures? Are we thinking about arriving to our heavenly home? There's an opportunity today, if there's anyone who's not yet a child of God, there is no better time than right now to put on Christ. And for those of you who are children of God, would like to pray for your brother on behalf. Why don't you come forward as we stand and sing the song that was selected.